News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
It's 6:38, you're listening to Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall. The outlook for economic growth remains strong both here in Ireland and in our major trading partners, but the squeeze on middle income earners is becoming more pronounced as a range of non-discretionary costs continue to rise. That's according to economist Jim Power, whose economic outlook for Friends First is published this morning. And Jim Power joins us in studio. Jim, you're predicting very, very solid economic growth this year, which I suppose very few commentators would have predicted after the Brexit vote last June.
Well, yeah, I mean, the expectation generally was post June 23rd last year that the UK economy would immediately go into a bit of a downturn, and that was certainly driven by the Bank of England and the UK Treasury. In the event, sterling weakness has given a major boon to the UK export sector, and in terms of business investment and consumer spending generally, there hasn't been that much reaction to something that hasn't yet happened. But I think, you know, increasingly over the next couple of years, as the Brexit talks get underway post-election, as the difficulties of that process become more and more evident, I think you will start to see business investment becoming a lot less buoyant. So that is definitely the biggest risk factor for Ireland. But at the moment, the global economy is actually picking up very, very strongly. The US is doing well. China is coming back. And I think most importantly of all, from an Irish perspective, the Eurozone economy in the last 9 months has really been shown pretty positive momentum. So for a small open economy like Ireland, that sort of external backdrop does create very favourable winds for us.
Nonetheless, a very high proportion of our exporters, particularly our smaller exporters, are dependent on the UK to a large degree. The currency sterling has depreciated by 10-11% more. Do you think a lot of Irish businesses have become accustomed now to this mid-80s range?
I mean, I think some have and some haven't. The bigger ones very definitely, I think, are adjusting. But 70% of our processed consumer food exports, for example, go to the UK market. And a lot of those are reasonably small. So definitely there has been a squeeze there. But I sense so far this year that they're actually maintaining market share in the UK, starting to adjust to currency. But obviously, when you get that sort of currency adjustment, it does have implications for margins and for cost management. And I think a lot of food businesses particularly are now trying to adjust to that. But there's still quite a level of optimism out there, even in that sector, despite its exposure to the UK and sterling.
Now, I suppose the real Brexit negotiations probably won't start till the autumn, with the German elections out of the way and all of that. But how long do you think we might have this window where the real threat of Brexit doesn't really manifest itself?
Well, I actually think within weeks of the election later this
week. You think it will start soon?
I think it has to start, because there is March 19 is the limit.
Ticking away.
And it's ticking away, and the expectation is that agreement will have to be reached by October or November 2018. So because it then has to get parliamentary approval, not alone in the UK, but also across the EU 27. So I think the negotiations will actually have to up the ante pretty quickly. And there's a couple of issues that are obviously going to create serious difficulty in the beginning. One is the bill that the UK allegedly or otherwise owes to the European Union. The European Union has been talking about 100 billion euro, which the UK disputes. That's going to be a sticking point. And there's also the issue about the recognition of EU citizens in the UK and UK citizens in the European Union. Agreement will have to be reached, and then we start to get into
So do you think by as early as next spring, perhaps, we would begin to see the real fault lines if they're there, and that could influence the sterling value significantly?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, you see, the EU perspective is that there will have to be a press conference before and after every round of negotiations. The UK perspective is they don't want anything said until the whole process is completed. So I think the EU view is going to win out there. We're going to get constant news flow about how the talks are going. There'll be good weeks, there'll be bad weeks. So I think sterling has the potential to be incredibly volatile during that period. And I think clearly the more likelihood of hard Brexit and difficult negotiations, the more pressure it will put on the sterling and vice versa.
Brexit aside, and it's a big qualifier, of course, where do you see the main risk to the Irish economy? Do you agree with the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, whose report is out this morning, that overheating in the construction sector may be a problem, and perhaps paying too much to public servants?
Well, it's quite clear we need to deliver residential housing as quickly as possible. There's also massive demand on the commercial side. So the whole construction sector is booming in terms of demand at the moment. My issue would be, do we have the capacity to actually deliver that? And we're already starting to see costs rising quite strongly. So I would agree with the Fiscal Advisory Council about the potential for that sector.
Would
to
you suggest
problems.
That the next Minister for Finance should probably ease back on that subsidy that was introduced last year for first-time buyers?
Well, I believe he should get rid of it. I think it was a disaster day one. It should not have been introduced. A demand-side approach to this problem is not the way forward, in my view. I've always argued it is a supply-side response. Their whole issue is about releasing tracts of land, planning, about making sure that the delivery of residential housing is economically viable for developers. All of these issues need to be addressed. In terms of public sector pay, that's obviously the other big one. I mean, Leo Varadkar will discover, and he's Minister for Finance, whoever that will be, presumably Pascal, and Pascal will be well aware of it anyway, that the fiscal constraints in which the government will be operating over the next couple of years, they are still pretty difficult, and many demands out there. There's huge demand for better public services, there's huge demand for an increase in public sector pay, and there's also demand for, and Leo Varadkar has actually promised some relaxation on the personal tax side. It will be very difficult to actually balance all of those objectives. So I think Pascal will really have to hold the line on public sector pay.
You're saying 4.3% real economic growth this year. All things being equal, how do you see 2018 at this early stage?
At this early stage, I think 4% growth rate looks achievable. There's a pretty strong momentum evident across the economy at the moment, and nowhere is that more evident than on the employment side, where most sectors are contributing to strong growth in employment.
Let's hope you prove right, Jim. Jim Power, thanks indeed for joining us this morning. Now, to a totally different subject, the value of the most high-profile of digital or cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, rose by another 8% yesterday to a new record of more than $2,900 and has surged by more than 200% in value this year to date, far surpassing the gains made by stocks and other asset classes. But is there any substance to the rising value of cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin, or are we witnessing a potential asset bubble? Laurie Keogh is Director of Financial Services Strategy and Operations with Deloitte Ireland and joins us in studio. Laurie, what do you think?
Good morning, Vincent. Thank you very much for having me. What do I think? I think the gains are based on the price in which the market is willing to pay for Bitcoin. That's clear. So over the last 12 months, the price has gone from, I think, approximately €500 to €2,500. That's based on a number of different factors. Number one is that people are fleeing to Bitcoin. Instead of actually fleeing to gold in periods of volatility in the markets, they're fleeing to digital gold, which Bitcoin is. And that's exactly what it was meant to be. There was meant to be a finite supply of Bitcoin. So there'll only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. So as time goes on, supply obviously decreases, demand increases, and the price therefore increases. There's also another clear reason why I think the price of Bitcoin has increased, and that is based on the hype around blockchain technology. So we're seeing a lot of financial services institutions and many other sectors look at blockchain technology as a means to disintermediate, but also move to a peer-to-peer basis.
Blockchain being a new digital, almost instant payment transfer system.
Exactly, and more than just payments, to be honest. So whether it's, I guess what blockchain simply does is it creates a single source of truth. That's probably a key thing. So it's a form of database. So if you think of a ledger, instead of us, me having a ledger and you having a ledger where you record and I record, there is one ledger which sits in the middle, which we both see. Therefore, there's savings associated with that.
Now, you say that there's a finite amount of Bitcoin, just
yes,
like gold, and that gives it a haven status. But there are all these alternative crypto digital currencies as well, such as Ethereum. So surely that has the potential to undermine the value of Bitcoin.
Yes, but what you tend to see, I think people who invest in Bitcoin will also invest in Ether, which is the coin associated with the Ethereum platform. And there are many others for that matter. So what you tend to see is, actually, you know what, I'm seeing the price of Bitcoin increase. What other cryptocurrencies are there? So I'll invest in those as well. The price of Ether has also undergone a significant rally. And I'd argue probably even more so over the last 12 months than actually Bitcoin.
To what degree will the value of these cryptocurrencies, such as Bitcoin, depend on the credibility factor, the affirmation that perhaps the central banks of the world will require?
Okay, and I think that's a very interesting question. So what I would say, what's happened over the last kind of 3 months, which is of significance to the price of Bitcoin, is actually what happened in Japan. So Japan now accepts Bitcoin as a currency. So you can go into the equivalent of Toys R Us and buy your child's toy using Bitcoin. So that news has spread across the world and also kicked the price up further over the last kind of little period.
So do you believe that the value, like with any asset class, a market ultimately determines the current value of that asset. But do you believe as we evolve, as we use more digital payment systems like blockchain, that there is real substance underlying these currencies?
I do. I see the price continuing to increase. I think by 2020 just alone, I see the price of per Bitcoin will probably be nearing 10,000 euro a Bitcoin. That's what a lot of analysts are saying. I think also another interesting development is that we're going to see another application for a cryptocurrency ETF to be approved by the Securities and Exchange Commission in New York. When that happens, then that means institutional investors will have access to buy effectively Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, which in turn will only increase the price once more.
Now, we have a long established tradition on this program of not recommending any sort of investment strategy, Laurie. But I mean, given that it is relatively easy to trade Bitcoin on various indices around the world, why shouldn't everyone just pile into it?
So like any investment, I think being prudent is key. So I think you have to diversify any portfolio. So I think it's Bitcoin is worth and other cryptocurrencies are worth a flutter? Absolutely. You can buy in for as little as 20 euro at an individual level, which I think is, you know, a round of drinks for perhaps people you don't like or you've never met before, or indeed you've made worse bets. So a great way to just experiment, dip your toe in the water is invest 20 euro.
But at least if you're investing in a company share or some sort of other class, you can get down under the bonnet and read the annual report or talk to analysts or whatever. How can you get a feel for the real underlying value of a digital currency?
And very good question. The price is based on what the market is willing to pay, and it is simple as that. So is it based on the output of a company? Unfortunately not. Is it based on the output of a country? Is it backed by a central government? No. But it is based on other factors that I mentioned. So we see Japan.
So demand will continue to grow, you think?
Demand will absolutely continue to grow.
Let's watch that one with interest. Laurie Keogh of Deloitte, thanks indeed for joining
us. Thank you.
It's 6:53 on Breakfast Business, and Alan Breen of Cantor Fitzgerald joins us to review markets. Alan, as they say on Sky Sports, when they're hyping up a particular sporting day, tomorrow, in some ways, is Super Thursday.
Good morning, Vincent. That's right. Yeah, big day tomorrow. Big day tomorrow. You've three key events, effectively. You've got the UK election. It will be closely watched for obvious reasons. We have the ECB meeting as well. So in terms of it's a policy meeting as well. So in terms of their next step is will be obviously very closely watched. And also you have the FBI director, James Comey. He gives evidence in Washington about the Russians' alleged involvement in the US election. So that will be important in terms of the US, the current administration.
And in many ways, of the three big events tomorrow, that James Comey testimony is the least predictable in some ways, isn't it? I mean, we are expecting a conservative victory in the UK. It just depends on the margin. We kind of know what Draghi is going to say, although we'll be looking for nuances, but we actually don't know what Comey's going to say, I suppose.
We don't, and it will be closely watched in terms of the impact. Again, yeah, it is the huge variable out there. But in fairness, I think the market's more focused on the economic data and what's been happening in the last couple of days. If you look last week, we had a very strong ADP employment number, which was the precursor for the non-farms, which came in quite a fair bit behind expectations. 38 came in, a print of 138,000, about 44,000 behind market expectations. We have seen quite soggy economic data as well, so that'll be very, very important. Actually, today, later on today, you'll have US credit release, which should show economic indicators have raised concerns that a rebound in growth in the second quarter will be softer than the market had initially expected. So it'll be interesting to see what the kind of credit data comes out today. If that's slightly behind, that's another precursor for future economic prints, perhaps.
And coming back to this side of the Atlantic, Mario Draghi has been consistent in saying that despite the seeming upturn, strong upturns in key European economies like France and Germany, that the ECB is not yet ready even to suggest that its quantitative easing will taper back. But analysts, perhaps commentators, are looking for perhaps some nuances in his statement, in their statement later this week, that, that the downside, the risk to the downside has passed. They're down into critical words at this stage in the commentaries, aren't they?
Yes, and that's what it has been about. We don't expect any fundamental change. It's all about the rhetoric. It's all about comments. It's all about future expectations. It'll have an obvious impact on the euro. The economic data has been quite good coming out of the out of Europe, which is obviously very encouraging. But yes, it'll be about the tone and the rhetoric and future policy direction after the press conference, effectively. Coming back, we were talking about the UK election. I mean, we were here a year ago. It's less than a year since James Cameron resigned following the Brexit vote.
James Cameron.
But after David Cameron resigned, here we are a year later, less than a year later, with another general election. The sense, I suppose, has been, I suppose, the worst case scenario for the market in the short term would be a hung parliament. We don't expect that to be the case, but you can't rule it out either. So it will be a very important event in terms of the UK, obviously in terms of sterling and the impact politically as well.
What's the market view on this ongoing situation in Qatar? Do they feel it will be resolved? I mean, I suppose the biggest impact is on oil, just the volatility of the oil price.
Yeah, it's been a difficult one. I suppose it could have ramifications again politically as well, and in terms of the US and in terms of policy going forward. But the most obvious for market participants would be the impact on oil. It has an impact, but the other issue, I suppose, is the overall oversupply in the oil market at the moment. As the oil price goes higher, it entices marginal producers in, and that in theory increases supply, which has a negative impact as well. But also global concerns about growth. We've seen production increase, and we've seen rig counts increase in the States as well through shale. So there are other factors at play as well. We do expect, and we have expected, oil to continue to trade within a relatively tight range.
Finally, Alan, we're counting down to the prospectus for AIB. You guys are in there as one of the players. I suppose you can't give us a feel for what sort of retail demand is out there for the share?
Yeah, that's right. We've been appointed as an intermediary in respect of the flotation. We're still waiting prospectus on further details, which we're expecting in middle of June, possibly next week. I suppose for anyone looking to participate in the flotation, they would need an account, and I think that needs to be done by
around the
15th of June. So maybe contact your broker and make sure that you have an account is probably good advice in that regard.
Okay, Alan Breen of Cantor Fitzgerald, thanks indeed for joining us. That's it from Breakfast Business with Vincent Wall for this morning. I'll be back with bulletins at 7:30 and 8:30. Coming up after the traffic news, it's over to Paul and Shane with all the stories of the morning on News Talk Breakfast. Stay tuned.